Lenovo Data Bytes. Hello listeners, welcome to another exciting episode on the Leadership Lens series as a part of the Lenovo Data Bytes podcast. I'm your host Sneha and I'm excited to take you on today's data journey. Speaking of today's topic, imagine it's the year 2035. Your AI assistant predicts your breakfast, your smart fridge negotiates grocery prices directly, and your self-driving car syncs with traffic lights even before you start your commute. It might sound like a sci-fi movie, but we are on the brink of something just as thrilling, generative AI. As we explore how this technology will reshape our world, particularly in the field of data management, I would like to welcome our guests today, Suresh Chandrasekaran, Executive Vice President at Lenovo. With expertise in business strategy, market positioning, and revenue growth, Suresh is here to explore the future of data management in the face of GenAI, what to expect in the next decade. Get ready for a thought-provoking conversation as we explore how generative AI is set to transform data management strategies and redefine the way we handle and leverage data in the coming years. Welcome to the Leadership Lens series, Suresh. I'm eager to listen to your vision of how GenAI will change the world of data management. But before we begin, can you tell us a little bit about your role at Lenovo for our listeners, please?
Hi, Neha. Yes, I'm Suresh, and I'm glad to be on another version of Lenovo Data Bytes. And yes, my role as EVP is to be focused on both the strategy for the company going forward in key areas, which include our partnerships, our cloud presence, our GenAI and AI journey, as well as assisting our CEO and top leadership in the operational excellence of the company. I have been with Lenovo for 18 plus years and in various different roles. And I'm very excited for the continued growth of the company and our contribution, more importantly, to customers and through our partners in the space of data management, leveraging some of the latest developments in the industry, such as GenAI.
Awesome. Thank you so much for sharing, Suresh. So speaking of today's topic, how do you imagine GenAI to revolutionize our lives in the next 10, 15 years?
Yes, before I answer that question, Neha, your introduction was very, very interesting about negotiating prices, the refrigerator doing that. And, you know, in our household with the three young adults who have voracious appetites, I'm going to kind of add another twist to that. I would like for them to, I can imagine them having body sensors that communicate directly with the refrigerator or the blender based on their workout, how much caloric needs they have, and, you know, the protein shakes being automatically prepared and being ready for them so mom doesn't have to intervene. So that would make my wife very happy. So those are the kinds of scenarios that, you know, yes, did sound like science fiction, but are coming true every day. I was reading a very perceptive insights article by McKinsey that said that many of the tasks that were considered to reach the level of the top quartile of human performance that would reach that stage somewhere in 2050 to even as far away as 2065, prior to this whole generative AI wave that we are experiencing, McKinsey has re-estimated that they are likely to reach that top quartile of human level performance in many cases 20 to 30 years faster. So we're now talking late 2020s to early mid 2030s. So even things such as social and emotional sensing, social and emotional reasoning are predicted to happen at the top level of human performance before 2030. So that's a dramatic shift in the possibilities. So coming back to your question, I see that the impact of GenAI is both on data management and from data management onto the other uses. So for simplicity, we'll talk about both in this session, but I see data management itself becoming so much more capable, so much more able to feed into business use cases, scientific use cases, clinical use cases, so on and so forth, automation use cases. But for that to do that, data management itself cannot be so dependent on some of the more, let's say, time-consuming human processes and need to be automated. Now, but the data that it then delivers to those other business and life needs also need to be of greater, let's say, immediacy, relevance, as well as trustworthiness, and also ensuring that it doesn't do bad, which could be mean many things, such as, you know, breaking privacy or stealing information or, you know, compromising or misleading people in the wrong direction, etc. So it can have implications. So I think we have a lot to learn, but at the same time, we're seeing patterns of how data management itself is going to evolve through Gen AI, as well as how it's going to impact and what are the key things to look for in a data management solution supporting Gen AI applications.
Very well said there, Suresh. So it definitely is going to be a whole new world that we'll be looking at in the next 10, 15 years. And the factors that you mentioned are almost like the building blocks of this world. How do you think generative AI will change the way we manage data in the next decade?
Yes. So this question I'll take as, you know, how Gen AI impacts data management itself. You know, today, when you think about a very basic tasks like, you know, generating a report for management, you know, in the data and analytics space, people need to understand, you know, what metrics am I trying to report on? What are the elements of that metrics? What are the data sources I need to get that data from? You know, how do I find them, access them, bring them together? And usually there are some integrations and transformations involved of that data. And then I need to understand, you know, how real time or current, you know, maybe is it about the past quarter or is it what's happening in real time? So those things have to be figured. And then somebody has to assess all that fit for purpose, put it together and send in that report. So if I take something like that and then just relate back, Neha, to your wonderful and very personal example of sensing the needs of for breakfast and pre-ordering the food. Imagine a situation where there is a data marketplace or your data AI assistant in the data management world that has different stakeholders, is observing what their daily work is, what and how they are optimizing what they do. So if it is a clinician, they're optimizing, you know, patient outcomes. If it is a manufacturing, they're optimizing wastage in the production line. If it's management, they're making sure that cash flow and profitability are enhanced, whatever it is, right? So they already know what you're measuring, how you're performing your tasks, understands those metrics that are to be managed, and starts to go and find data that can help you with those metrics, pre-integrates them and almost offers them to you through this marketplace, through AI prompts and saying, hey, I know that you're planning this meeting next week to, you know, let's say, review your supply chain efficiency. Here are some data and analytics and reports that I've prepared for you from which, based on your, again, verbal feedback, how can I enhance it so you're better prepared for this meeting tomorrow? I mean, that sounds, again, like science fiction, but the ability to sense the needs of various people, bring the data together, manage them, and deliver that through this kind of AI-assisted data marketplace is where I think this can go. And so at a high level, let me pause there, but I would like to double click on, you know, how, what those elements are that will get us there.
Very interesting, Suresh. I mean, I think the opportunities are endless if this is something that will become a reality in the next decade or so. So as we, you know, deep dive into those factors that you mentioned, which are the building blocks of data management, like we discussed earlier, before we get started on that, Gen AI, you know, is getting smarter and smarter. How crucial will it be to make sure the information it gives us is accurate and relevant? And how can we avoid problems like AI hallucinations? Is this one of the factors that you wanted to discuss?
Yes. So you referred a couple of times here to building blocks. Let me just lay them out first, and then, you know, I'll come back to this trustworthiness of the data as one of the key pillars. So the first pillar that I'd like to emphasize is more the consumption side, right? So I just touched on that, which is I need to know what kind of information people might need if information management is important. And for that, I need to know what kind of tasks they're performing. And for that, I need to know what outcomes they're trying to optimize, and I can keep on going. So when I talked about McKinsey's report about social and emotional sensing, you know, understanding and those kinds of sensing what people need is actually the kind of the frontier today that we aren't quite reached, but we need that as an input to being proactive in supplying the data. So I'll start that as one pillar, just understanding the needs and continuously evolving the understanding of those needs. The second is that you need to be very open to no walls between data, in the sense of, we'll come back to walls for privacy, but I mean that in order to optimize those outcomes, I should not be restricted to a small data set or even what we call big data, but data that I own in my company, in my silos. It should be all data, in the sense that data that's within my walls, but data from my partners, data from my entire supply chain, data from my customers, data from the public domain and social domain, et cetera, but with the right rights to use. You know, when I go out, drive a car, I'm using the public roads, I'm using the public signs, but I'm using my car and paying for my gas. But, you know, so this idea of there are boundaries and who owns it and who needs to get paid. But the idea is I'm not limiting to just data that's in my thing. So that's another pillar. The most important thing when you bring all this information together is also understanding its relevancy to the problem. So for certain questions, data that's, you know, 10 years old and up to about accurate up to yesterday is good enough, or up to last month is good enough. For certain other tasks, you may need more real-time data or almost instantaneous data. So knowing that sense of timeliness, batch versus real-time, is important. One of the most pillars in my mind is the idea of semantics, right? Because different words, different data have different meanings. If this is not unified in some way, and is not only unified, but is in a more human understandable form, which then makes it much more able to help in the context of Gen AI in these things and democratizes the use of data. So semantics and the meaning of the data and the meaning of the metadata and everything underneath that is an extremely important capability. Again, remember, across all of those distributed data sets. And then the trustworthiness, which is the thing you brought up. I need to know that if it has gone through several transformations, if it's come from 5 different places or 100 different places, at any point in time, I'm able to ground my assessment of that data down to where it came from, what journey it took, how it all got transformed into what I'm seeing now, even if all that happened in the split seconds before I got the data. So there's an idea of trust comes from understanding the lineage and the governance of that, but it also becomes the seed by which I may have to pay different people. So there's a commercial aspect of, I use data from 100 sources. So, you know, maybe there are micropayments happening for my use of that data. And I'm also making sure I'm not, you know, stealing content, and there is security and privacy and all that. So if I put those 4 or 5 things together and I can automate that process of how data is sensed, integrated, semantically presented, and in a trustworthy, grounded way, I think we're talking about that next stage of evolution of data management with the help of Gen AI.
Very interesting. Thank you, Suresh. So speaking of security and no walls, like you mentioned earlier, with Gen AI becoming more powerful, what should businesses do to keep their data secure and private? And how can they make sure the data they're using is trustworthy? Like, can you touch upon this a little bit more in a way of data governance and privacy?
Yeah. As I was referring to, the first is fit for purpose. So when I think of the broader word of governance, et cetera, there are a few sub-concepts that I think we at Denodo are also very focused on. So we need to understand which data is relevant to what question or problem. So this often comes about by having that semantic layer. So for example, if I say revenue, or if I say, you know, readmission rates for a patient into a hospital, we need to be sure that we're talking about the same thing. So semantics about those metrics itself are very important. Understanding the elements of the data that feed into those metrics like revenue are very important. And so being able to automatically understand, classify, and normalize where needed to be normalized, these semantics is the first step. Understanding the sourcing of the data is very important. Now, knowing when not to use certain data is also important. So for example, if there is privately identified PII information, not being able to filter that out from a security privacy concerns is important. And also from a bias perspective, if you have data that is very skewed towards one subset of the population, you don't want to be making recommendations to another subset of the population. So there's a lot of nuances there, but truly the way I put it is understanding the use and understanding the data and making sure that they are compatible by providing a lot of information about the data itself, the metadata, the lineage, et cetera, is kind of what prompts that. The second aspect of that is, do I have permission to use? And permission to use in the case of individual or personal data has to be explicit, and that can be triggered. So just like you said, do you have permission to use what's in your refrigerator so that the grocery store can optimize the next shipment? Well, they need the permission to use. They cannot be spying on your refrigerator, so to speak. In other cases, it's not just a question of privacy or do they have permission to use. They may have to pay to use. So we're now talking about a data economy where multiple people are offering that data, but either for a benefit or for a payment. So that also is important that we're not violating copyrights to the data. And then finally, protecting the data. And we will soon be seeing a blog article that I helped provide some content for around the nexus of what data management and data security and privacy and how it fits in with the broader concepts of cybersecurity and infiltration. So that is also very important. So we need to make sure that there are sufficient security things for not only corrupting how LLMs learn, because at the end of the day, LLMs are learning, or these large language models are learning based on the data you provide. So you provide them the wrong data, they can learn differently. So detecting that, there are cybersecurity topics. I'm not going to veer into that. But at the data protection level, it's also important we know that who is accessing the data, not only for training those LLMs, and how is it being used in what's called the inference process, which is solving these business or process problems. So I've touched on a few ideas. It spans understanding semantics, governance, you know, being able to trace the path of the data up to the point of use, paying for it, getting privacy permissions for it, and also protecting it. So there's a lot of subtopics here. I hope that kind of helps summarize my thoughts on security.
It definitely does, Suresh, and thank you for explaining it so well. And moving to another factor that you mentioned, which is relevancy of data. What do you think about how these new tech that we are hearing about, like retrieval augmented generation, RAG, and how will it affect real-time data, like managing real-time data?
Yeah, so relevancy of data or relevancy of data, but also relevancy of the Gen AI engines is something that's now, you're already seeing that. So initially we had this one thing called, you know, GPT, I think it was 3.0. People all got, you know, I think in less than 2 months, it had 100 million users. And that was because it was so universal, anyone could interact with it and ask questions and get answers. But even within the short 2 years since that happened, we are seeing more domain-specific LLMs or large language models for the medical area or for finance. Bloomberg launched something just around finance and so on and so forth. And so there are two levels, I think, in the relevancy. The first level is before how those large language models are trained in the first place. And that's a little bit from the perspective of Denodo and data management. We are feeding data for trainings in some cases, but it's its own process. Now, when you refer to RAG, which is expanded for our listeners' benefit as retrieval augmented generation, what that is saying is that not every company has the money and the resources to train its own custom models. But even if they have very, very good large language models, they want to contextualize it using their company's data or whatever data that is in their domain in for a particular task. So that's the idea of retrieving that data, feeding it to the LLMs to enhance its knowledge of your context, your company, as opposed to those LLMs being trained on public data. and then making the outcomes relevant. Relevancy for me always has two sides, Neha. Just as we talked about, you know, it's the consumption side and the supply side. So first, we are already, I'll give you in Denodo, through our interactions with the data catalog, being in a very privileged position of what data customers are requesting by different personas and different roles and different users. That's the perception side. What is the potential use case that you're looking to use this for? That informs for me what kind of data you need and how soon you need it or how timely in terms of real time versus, you know, is it a day old information enough, et cetera, et cetera. So to come back to that, and then when I present that data, it needs to be understandable and explainable. So all of these things are where the idea of sensing the need, sensing the data sources, where I'm getting from and what transformations it's gone through, and having that fully understood and making that match. It's kind of like being a matchmaker, and Gen AI being the matchmaker, and doing it proactively instead of waiting for the request is kind of the what gets us all excited in this data management space about how we're going to improve upon that. We're already doing that, but we can improve upon that tremendously. So sensing the need for the data, the timeliness, the metrics, sensing the data itself that's at hand, and proactively doing the transformations and the integrations, and then feeding them either as available data sets, data as a service, pushing them through streaming. And so we're constantly drip feeding those employees or clinical people, whatever, with the data that they need, and making it meaningful to them so they don't have to go consult some glossary to understand what it is. These are the areas where I think relevancy becomes important. And it's subtle, but it can have a huge impact in how well a job is done, as we said, at the top percentile of human performance. So today, some people have the ability to do that, but that's because of their unique capabilities as a human. If we can bring that top percentile of human performance down to the masses, the potential is phenomenal.
Very exciting. Thank you, Suresh. And I really like the way you explained, you know, the relevancy of data aspect from a consumption point of view and perception point of view. Looking into the future, how do you see generative AI helping to make data management more accessible to everyone from a consumption side? And how can companies make sure this technology benefits everyone from a perception point of view, if I can put it that way?
Yeah, and this is something as a longtime employee of Denodo, but I think somebody who believes deeply, along with some of my colleagues who have been with the company since the founding, like Angel Viña, our CEO, or Alberto Pan, our CTO, we've always liked the idea of embrace heterogeneity, but unify all of this disparate data using a logical approach or a semantic approach. Why I say that even more is while all this is happening, there's a mad rush and has been happening that I have to put every piece of data that I'm going to consider in this RAG process, in this, you know, feeding the generative AI engines in my silos. They may be huge, massive, so you may not think of them as silos, but they're still silos if it's all being moved into the central, you know, data lake. While data lakes and data warehouses and application silos and other things have their purpose, they have natural limits. They may be much, much larger, those limits, than they were before because costs have come down, you know, scalability has gone up, etc. But I just want to re-emphasize this most fundamental point. The way and the speed with which data is growing, we talked about sensor bodies, you know, my kids' workout data being passed in, all of this cannot possibly be put in one place for various reasons. And also, if we try to take that mentality too far, we miss the opportunity to consider data sets that are outside our walls, the public domain, et cetera. And I don't want to be moving everything in and out and in and out all the time. It's a waste of energy. So I think this is very important as a very fundamental principle to embrace heterogeneity, to embrace the idea that, you know, data can live in many different places in hybrid formats, et cetera, but I have this capacity to still bring them together through this concept of data virtualization, if you want to call it, or a semantic layer, a logical data fabric, different words, same concepts. So that's very fundamental. And that hasn't changed in 20 years, and it won't change, in my view, in the next 20 years. It'll just get better. And as it gets better, people will feel less and less need that I've got to put it all in one place or put it in my way, you know, of looking at things. So that is what we are very focused on. How do we make this data management engine in the middle so good at being able to bring together these disparate data sets, you know, and do what we need to do in a matter of milliseconds, and yet maintain all of that heterogeneity and then be able to push that data. So there's two or three areas that are very important. The ability to integrate a broad spectrum of data and do it with high performance, et cetera, which is at the core level. The ability to understand and put all of the checks and balances, whether it's governance, security controls, on how that data flows through, including micropayments and all that. And the third broad area is, how do I present it to the average consumer? You know, could be a truck driver, as in one of our customers, SS Express. It could be a manufacturing line supervisor, as in Festo, which manufactures pneumatic products. It could be a doctor at Kaiser. Anyone, and how we deliver that data, and that's where our focus on the data marketplace is very important. Every one of these areas today and in the future will have Gen AI type, or AI and Gen AI type bots that are improving the processes to make data management as a whole more automated. And that's what's very exciting, and that's what we're working on every day.
Definitely, Suresh. And I agree. I think Gen AI has already seeped into our day-to-day lives, and it will, you know, take on a more powerful role in the next 10, 15 years, I'm sure. So this was a very insightful discussion, Suresh. Thank you for discussing the future of data management in the age of Gen AI. So since we've been discussing all things Gen AI today, I thought it would be fun to wrap up our session with a quick Q&A around the future of Gen AI. So are you ready?
Okay.
So my first question for you. So what's one futuristic gadget or technology you wish you had in your daily life that doesn't exist yet?
We've been talking about customer 360 and patient 360, et cetera. I'm at a personal level, I'm heading out on Monday during the Labor Day weekend to be in a remote area of Yellowstone. And it's as much as I'm excited about bear sightings, I'm also scared. And I've always thought having 360 vision would be 360 and distant, like, you know, binocular type vision incorporated, but not overpowering my senses, where my brain can simply switch to a narrow, you know, 10 degree view of what's in front of me. Maybe I'm just reading a signpost and that's all I care about. I also, when I ride motorcycles, I think that it would be great if I can automatically sense what I need to sense, but at an instant I can switch and say, what's happening behind me? What's happening in the far distance? What's happening, you know, where only a machine can see it because of all the, you know, optical generation, binocular or whatever, telescopic vision, but have that all available to me through this, maybe a device I'm wearing or sensors that are in the back of my head or on the back of my helmet while I'm riding a motorcycle, but have all that information available to me. And then mentally, I call upon the view that I want to have. That's a futuristic vision that I could use when I go backpacking, hiking, motorcycling, skiing, whatever.
That was a good one. Very cool. Thanks, Suresh. And the last question for the day is, if you could ask Gen AI any random question just for fun, what would it be?
I'm going to be sounding a little... We all seek in life, I've traveled a lot, Neha, you know, actually I've clocked more than 100 countries now through my various travels. And one of the things that struck me at the most basic human level is that everybody in any culture, in any level, economic, they all strive for the same things, you know, to be happy, to have good family, friends, relationships, etc. So if there was one question I would ask Gen AI, from whichever standpoint I am, you know, I'm in my late 50s, you know, how do I optimize my happiness over the next decade? That would be my question. And it will give me all the ideas, which I think I know inherently, but more specifically of how to balance work and family, health and recreation, and, you know, doing something very meaningful for society. You know, if I could get answers to things like that, because I'm at a point, at least in my life, where I've been very blessed with great things, economic stability and all that. But we're always striving for that next level of happiness.
Definitely. Like the pursuit of happiness and saving oneself from bear attacks, like the range of conversation we've had in the light of Gen AI today is really exciting and fun. So thank you so much, Suresh. This was a wonderful discussion, and it was really interesting to understand, you know, the different facets of data management as we discussed today. And thank you again for joining us on this episode.
Thank you very much, Neha. I always enjoy talking to you about these topics.
And a quick message to our listeners. If you enjoyed this episode, please head over to denodo.com/podcast to find out more resources on all things data.